about it. It's a theme from it's been a theme that I've been exposed to lately. So Meryl is an amazing artist. She started out taking pictures in the 70s of the seamy side and the exotic side and the exciting part of New York.
Absolutely.
And she has like such great photographs and such a great record of that exciting period of New York City. And then she got into a relationship and got a job as a school teacher in around 1980. And so that's when she stopped doing photography in that way. And just in the last few years, she's had two books, a solo show. She's considered one of Time Magazine this year. This is such a huge honor. Time Magazine's
unsung
women photographer
of the past century.
Of the past fucking century.
Yeah, that's amazing.
It's a huge honor. Huge honor.
Huge.
And well deserved. So anyway, Meryl, I did give you an intro there. Is there anything that you would like to add to that I missed? Did I miss any, like, you know, has Hillary Clinton given you any awards or something that I might have missed?
No, I did receive NYFA Fellowship. I mean, I
did
have,
you this year?
No. Throughout my career as an artist, which I would say, you know,
is lifelong,
school, 1975, right? I've always exhibited.
Mm-hmm.
I have received multiple fellowships and grants and public art things, but no one ever knew or remembered my name. As I've never stopped. I've even my career as a school teacher in Bushwick, my students' work was in the Whitney Biennial. It's like, but no one knew. This is the first time that.
Is that right? You were in the
true.
Whitney Biennial? What
yes.
year?
Meryl Meisler and the Drop-Ins. I had
a
dropout prevention program as art teacher at Intermediate School 291 here in Bushwick. Set up a photography program. And we did socially motivated collaborative work. And a piece that we did about what was wrong with the school physically and other things going wrong with it. It was in the DAOUT Art Foundation, and then when in 1978, it was even reviewed by Roberta Smith.
Really?
Yes. And then
what year? 78?
78. And then that piece, a group material, which was a well-known collaborative
very
group,
famous.
Was having an entire ground floor installation at the former Whitney, the AIDS timeline, and they included one of our question marks in there. They said they could they use that? I said, you could use a dot of the question mark. They only used one, not both of them. No, they used both. It was in there.
Wow.
And so, like, that piece was in the Whitney Biennial. That was, I believe it was in 1991. It was a weird year. It was a weird number.
Well, yeah. So you've had intermittent success. Acknowledgement.
Yes, I mean, I had an installation in Grand Central Terminal, one of the first digital artists to have work installed in the light boxes in Grand Central Terminal for over a year. I did a subway poster that was in the subways for 2 years. I've had things, but no one ever. It happened, and then it was over, and it was just going again.
Right.
So who knows if this is the same thing, but it doesn't
matter.
it doesn't matter.
You mean like in 5 years people, because that's anybody who's experienced any kind of success knows that like it can be very fleeting, right? You could get like a big solo show and the write-up in, art form, and then like a year later, everybody forgot your name.
If
you didn't sell any work or something like that, or something, God knows what, Donald Trump is running for president and took over the whole media landscape. You got, inched out, something like, anything can happen, right? So.
I think anyone, Lisa, I'm one of those people who said, I had a big public art grant in 1978 called a CETA grant, Comprehensive Employment Training Act. That was like the WPA of the 70s. I was certain I would be famous by the time I was 30.
Really?
That didn't happen.
Wow.
But I kept going because is something I love.
So how do you feel about that? How is that for you? I mean, like, just to like identify with you, for example, I mean, you've heard, I think every, I'm sick, I resist bringing this story up again. I probably have on the radio before, and I'm sure I have with you, about how I won that contest, the Hebrew National Contest, and I won $83,000. Did I ever tell you that? For coming up with the best headline, best idea, really, visual headline.
That's awesome.
And they made a campaign out of it, an advertising. It was a contest open to the public. It was like 12,500 entries in 1987. So I got quite a bit of attention, but it didn't really help my advertising career very much, believe it or not. And I was out of work 6 months later. And so anyway, and then like, I'm just saying, like, it didn't, you know, it's a great story now, and it's a cute YouTube video being on the news, but that's it. You know what I'm saying? So I understand, and I think when things like that happen to people, they get this expectation of, like, things are going to be great now, and it's never that way. Is that what?
I'm starting, you know, this is all in retrospect, of course. Those little things are like, you notice this picture of me as a Girl Scout. I'm wearing my badges, mm-hmm. the fellowships, the grants, the big things. So those little badges along the way.
Mm-hmm.
And you wear them and mm-hmm. your decorations. But it's the inner core of you that has to give you the strength to say, I'm doing it for me. I feel it's important. Or it gives me joy. Or I have no choice but to do it.
Oh, I feel that way too. I'm just saying that's I've never been like, if I don't get enough attention, I'm not going to make the work. Because, I mean, that those things are separate for me. Although, I mean, it's nice to get the attention,
sure
of course.
Sure helps to get the attention, yes.
But I'm saying, like, when you do get some attention and some recognition, don't you start feeling like, ooh, like what you were just saying, well, I'm going to be famous or I'm going to be successful making a living as a photographer by the time I'm 30. So how does that, like, how do you feel? Like, how did you feel before this all happened?
Well, like, again, I had all these little things along the way, you know, especially becoming a teacher, even though it was my own artwork I was always doing.
Mm-hmm.
People say teachers are shadow artists. You know, they do it through their kids.
Right.
And I did an amazing credit. I mean, I was a national award-winning teacher, but that's besides the point.
Uh-huh,
but I think I've channeled that energy, that push for other people into pushing for Meryl's work now.
Oh, good.
And because I...
And you're not teaching anymore, right?
This year, for the first time since 1979, I'm not teaching.
That's awesome. Is that because you are finally making some money on your work?
Oh, well, no. Let's say 1979. So in 79, I started teaching in New York City public schools. And I first year, I was four days a week. And then after that, 5 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
And I retired from then in 2010. And then immediately, one semester later, I started teaching part-time future art teachers at NYU. I was art education.
Oh, cool. That sounds interesting.
It was interesting because I also got to continue a body of work that I really, really, what will end up being probably my most amazing series when I go through it and get it out there, is that throughout my career, I've photographed. And so I have an insider's view of the schools.
Oh, man, that's awesome.
That are not like anyone else's.
Oh, man, I'm excited. You just gave me the chills. Do you have a publisher for that or any?
I'd like that. Hear out. This is like, these are
you should. Oh, yeah. I mean, somebody should totally jump on that. If there's anybody that knows anybody that wants to I'm going to talk to Phil about this because he's dealt with a few publishers. I mean, I don't know, but I know he'll be excited to hear about this kind of work.
Right. And even the pictures, when I left teaching for like 6 months, I mean, I retired already having the job in place at NYU because, believe it or not, I mean, I feel like my pension is my grant that I earned.
Oh,
myself.
Yeah.
It's my fellowship.
That's great.
But it's really, you know, it's I am very fortunate, but believe me, you're not rich doing that. It's like, yeah, but I'm
no,
so
but
thrilled.
You know what? I feel the same. See, isn't that funny? Because I'm only a few years younger than you, but I didn't really start making my art full time till a few years ago when I got married, and my husband's I mean, I still, you know, I make some money and I have an apartment that I rent or something, but I make a little money, but I never really had this much time until I could really spend all my time on my art. My career as an artist didn't go anywhere. It's true. I thought it would. I had this fantasy forever that I was going to make enough money as an artist and quit my advertising job, but it just never, ever happened.
Okay. So in this August, the job at NYU, which was part-time, but it was, you know, took up time, but it was also interesting supervising future art teachers and continuing photographing inside schools, the enrollment went down from 18, you know, to 18 to 6, so my job was eliminated. So this is the first time ever since 1979 that I'm not teaching anything to anyone, and I'm working totally full-time on this. And
congratulations.
Thank you. It's exciting.
It's very exciting.
It's exciting.
Oh, you must be so happy.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, you probably pinch me, right?
Yeah, and it's very amazing, and I feel very fortunate.
And you worked out a great, you know, you made that happen. Not fortunate. You fucking made it happen, Meryl.
Thank you, Lisa. Yes, and you did too. We all do.
Well,
and
Phil did.
But the teaching got me, and the fact that I was in Bushwick saved me. Look at this. Who would ever think that the fact that I taught in Bushwick for 14 years and I took snapshots along the way, that would give me the...
Yeah.
That was the stepping stone.
So funny,
isn't
it?
That was the stepping stone. And so it's...
When crazy. Don't live in Bushwick now.
I never lived in Bushwick.
Live in Manhattan, right?
Yes, I live in affordable housing in Manhattan.
And you always have, or... Affordable housing is an oxymoron, isn't it?
No, but I do.
You live in affordable housing, which sounds really funny because no one else lives in affordable housing.
And I
live in unaffordable housing.
It's very important. It wouldn't be in New York.
No,
this
that's
long.
Great. That's great. And you're a teacher, and you've given the planet some really great shit. You know, that's a really worthwhile. That's like great. You've probably inspired so many people. It's incredible.
Thank you. I just met with someone today.
Thanks for doing that.
Yeah, thank you. But it gave itself back so many ways. The people. I mean, I just see people every day.
Yeah, it must be great. It must be great.
Would our lives have been different if we didn't have to work while we did? Yes. But not everybody. Some people are. I was the kind of person who needed financial security.
Me too.
It wasn't going to come through marriage. It wasn't going to come.
I didn't. I mean, I got married at age 54. Yes. So, yeah.
And so I'm very grateful to have found something that I struggled at, right? Because first I was a freelance illustrator, you'd bill people and the check was in the mail, but the bills were in there much quicker.
So, yeah, no, that's a hard one. Yeah, I studied illustration in college. That's funny. But the thing is that your work informed your creative work, your paid work informed your creative work, so you might not have the work. I think that's true with a lot of people. It's been true for me. You know, like your paying work can inform your creativity, and the stability, financial stability, gives you enough freedom in order to make. I needed financial stability too, you know, a paycheck. I need health care. I feel bad. I mean, even when I was like 22, I couldn't. So anyway, we wanted to talk about, I asked you if it'd be okay if we talked about your personal life, and you were very generous in saying that would
be. I have two books. I'm an open book.
Well, you know, I don't know. I mean, you know, you haven't had me asking you questions on a recorded on a publicly recorded a medium before.
Okay, here we go.
So anyway, so you're a lesbian, and you've been in the relationship with.
I've been in a relationship with Patricia O'Brien.
Patricia.
Since we started dating in June of 79, but it was cross country, and we've been living together since September 9th, 1980. She moved to New York, which is the day, happens to be the day that Alice met and Gertrude met.
Oh, that's so funny. Are you guys married?
Yes, we married.
I think I remembered that, right?
I don't know.
Just before married. I knew you. Wait.
08, 08, 08, and we got married in Santa Rosa, California, with Patty's very good friend, Wes Winter, and his partner, Steve Gustafson. We wanted to do it together and up the numbers there. Because it's important to say it's not just San Francisco, it's not just New York, it's like people everywhere.
So were you out, you know, as a teacher, or did you feel like you had to hide that?
I first came out on April 1st, 1975, you know.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Tomorrow.
Tomorrow
it'll be how many years? What year? It'll be exactly
41 years.
Be your anniversary tomorrow. Shit. Congratulations on language. Coming out. So that's a pretty good April Fool's Day joke. Yeah. Hi, Mom, wow. I'm a lesbian. April Fool's.
And I immediately, it's funny, I immediately came out to my family and close friends. In fact, a childhood friend of mine, who's in the book, someone I know since I'm 4 years old, she came to the show, at my show with Stephen Casher Gallery, where we were hysterical laughing because she knows everybody in it, you know, and she's in the book.
Oh, that's so funny.
And she said, Meryl, do you remember when you were in Wisconsin? I was going to graduate school in Wisconsin. She said, we used to mail cassettes to each other. It's like, I have no memory of that. And I have a really good memory. Because the phone calls were expensive then. And I came out to her in an audio cassette.
Oh,
she
really?
Played out loud, and her parents heard it. I said, I have no recall of that whatsoever.
I think that could be a big hit.
Yeah, she said she might have it. She's got
some Helen Reddy on there. Yeah. I want to hear it.
Yeah. And then I
can't imagine what songs are on there.
Hi, Mom, I'm a lesbian. No, it was to Susan. Susan Pecker. And to my parents, I was taking a women's studies course, and I met someone in the class who was my first relationship, and I wrote about that in my paper for the class.
Oh, wow!
And so I had my parents and my brothers read the paper.
This is very, very. I mean, there weren't a lot of gay. There weren't like, as, I mean, not. It was a whole other story coming out in those days.
Okay, but teaching, you just didn't talk about it. You just didn't talk about it. You didn't talk about it. But
it was just a non-issue then?
No, you just didn't talk.
You feel angry or frustrated that you couldn't talk about it? Did you feel like people were like, how come Meryl doesn't have any boyfriends or dates?
And my friends knew about my private life, my life.
Mm-hmm.
And it just a non-spoken issue.
Were you so worried? Weird. Did you ever think they're going to find out and I'll lose?
Not at all. I had so many other things to worry about. I was more worried about the go-go.
Right.
No, I wasn't worried at all. Actually, you just didn't talk about it, which was crazy. And then when they had domestic partnerships.
Oh, yes.
I was literally, and Patty, my partner Patty, was, she actually taught at IS 111 for 7 years in Bushwick.
Oh.
And when she left teaching, because she never really wanted, you know, that really wasn't what she wanted, when she left that, and they were giving domestic partnership rights and health care, we were literally the first couple to sign up.
Oh, wonderful. That's beautiful.
For the healthcare in the city.
No, that's great.
Bam. So then I was like formally out in my school because there's payroll secretary.
Oh, good.
But no one spoke about it.
Well, I think you must have been an awesome representative of the lesbian community, and I think that must have been a really good thing. Yeah, you've made society. You've done some really good shit for us, for our society. Somebody who's a positive effect. We don't have that.
And then students who, we're teaching middle school students, they would sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they would sense something or say.
Would they ask you or intimate or be concerned about it in some way?
They would. No. My blanket issue back in the day, when I was very early, and they'd say, "What to ask about my private life?" I always say, stay after school after 3 o'clock, and I'll answer any questions you want. No one ever stayed.
That was nice. That's smart. Yeah.
This is something. It's funny to put on, but there was going in, and I double dated with the gym teacher at the school.
Teacher a lesbian?
Of course. Come on.
I didn't know if it was a male or female. I don't assume.
Yes, aren't they always
double date two gay guys? I don't know.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. But I remember going to a club, a women's club, and a girl who was in my class, like we're talking about a seventh grader, was there at the club. And she saw me and she ran away. She was like, had a card.
I probably would have too, because I'm really shy. I was really afraid of authority figures. That's a childish thing to do.
But in my school after Bushwick, and I went on I was going to say maternity leave. I went on sabbatical, and I was started another school in Manhattan, Institute for Collaborative Education. If anyone said anything that was inappropriate or made fun, I would like call them out of it. You're like, you're insulting me.
Right. I will not. Good for you, Meryl.
And then we had, as a faculty, we actually had decided to have a coming out day. And gay and straight, everybody wore pink triangles.
What year was that?
It was early digital. It was
in the 90s.
It was in the 90s. I started that school in 95. It was before 2000.
That's still pretty late when you think about it. I mean, it's sad. I mean, I just wanted to ask you about, I want to... What I was curious about is, when you were in your early 20s and you were taking all these pictures in these weird places in New York, you were a young woman, and tell me about, where you were, what your role in the clubs. You were part of the club scene, right?
Yes, definitely. Okay, my friend Judy Jupiter, who I met in Mardi Gras in 1977, we went on the bus going back, who is a boy crazy woman. How's that? We became fast friends, and she had a boyfriend who was a bartender in CBGB's, and we started going there. And then a hairdresser told us about Studio 54 opening, so we had to go there and became friends with the doorman and... Just really ran to all the clubs.
And you guys, I mean, I saw pictures of you in your disco days. You were like quite the babe, right?
Oh,
I mean,
you were a babe, Lisa. Check it out. No,
a different kind of babe. A man slaying babe, a hetero man slaying babe, right?
I've never used those words.
Cute. No, because this is what I was telling you, Meryl. You hadn't been on the radio with me. That's why you hadn't.
Okay, I never heard those words. I never thought about it.
So no one's. So you never thought about yourself that way? I mean, didn't part of I imagine, because I try to get in Studio 54 too, honey. No, but I imagine I saw pictures of you. I mean, you look like the kind of chick that the guy, the doorman at the, we need babes in here, models, babes. She's a babe. You're too short to be a model. But, you were a babe, right?
Thank you. I think we just.
Don't you think? They didn't just let any young girl in there. You were a babe. Come on, Meryl. You don't think that?
I think we were cute. I mean, cute and characters.
And characters too.
And interesting. Yeah. Interesting characters.
Yeah. You were characters too. I'll say that. But I mean, so what I'm saying is part of your, this is what I'm imagining, I guess. And you tell me, because I'm just full, I'm just make shit up. I don't know anything. I'm just projecting.
Okay.
So imagine you and your friend were two, happening, call it whatever you want. I mean, looks is only one aspect of it, but,
Two cutie pies with personalities.
Two women who seem like they'd be awesome to hang out with, okay, for whatever reason. Two young women, awesome to hang out with, young women being like just fun, not too deep, because we're too young at that age to be a lot of trouble that way. And So part, can I call you a party girl just for the hell of it? Just to
Yeah, you can call me a party. I have a good time.
Okay. So at that age you were like a party girl going out to all the clubs and stuff like that, but in that role, wasn't it a very male, like a very hetero role for you?
No, actually, the clubs that I like to go to were very mixed clubs, like Studio 54, Infinity, Les Mouches. They were very, I could go on and on, hurrah. They were very mixed, welcoming, so, cool.
So were you out as a lesbian in that situation?
Yes.
And
yes.
Did all the people know that you were a lesbian?
I didn't wear buttons.
But I mean, like, you know, she didn't go in there, hey, I'm a lesbian. No, but I mean, did guys try to hit on you?
Maybe. I don't know. I was too busy photographing, really, having fun. I was really just, when you say party, I was having fun and dancing and things like that.
Were there drugs and alcohol too?
There was lots of drugs and alcohol.
And did you consume any of those drugs or alcohol?
I can't drink. I never really could drink much. I'm a one drink person.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, I smoked marijuana. I no longer can. It doesn't agree with me. I did. Yes, there was lots of cocaine and poppers and things like that. I'm lucky I didn't like them.
Mm-hmm. So did you not do
a lot? Very available.
So everybody did a lot of drugs, but you and drinking, but you weren't doing that, but you were having fun.
Yes.
So you were part of the scene. How about your friend?
I don't want to speak for somebody else.
That's right.
We're still friends.
No, that's cool. No, and you're so right.
Yeah,
that was an inappropriate question. What a surprise!
But if you look in the book. She's in there with some things that are, how about, with things that are, their nutritional value are questionable.
Okay. So did you always think of yourself as a lesbian since you were, like, say, an adolescent and stuff like that?
Since I was what?
You know, since you were an adolescent or whatever, you?
I think like many people looking, you know, with their coming out stories, you had thoughts as a child, as a young person. But as you say, I am and always have been a babe. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe I'm a little less of a babe now, but as you put in your words, I'm a babe still.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a different type of babe.
Dated boys.
You had a lot of boyfriends. Male attention.
Yes, I had boyfriends early. I went to, I had sweet 16s. I went to all the proms. I, did all the whole route.
And did you think, that you were heterosexual? Did you expect that you were?
I had feelings. I had thoughts.
But did you like kissing boys and being with boys?
I kissed boys. And yes, I did. I like kissing boys and being with boys, yes.
And did you – so were you like conflicted or
– I was questioning.
Hmm.
You know, I think everybody's different. There's no one story between everyone. Asking. But I had interests. Patty and I actually went to the same high school, and in junior high school, she was one year she was in the room. She was in the seat next to me, and I remember having thoughts, but you didn't know what it was. Having thoughts.
Were you ever a partner of hers? Was she straight or gay?
Not until 79, and she had.
Oh, Patty. Patty, your girlfriend, your partner.
Yeah, she would
not
like.
Your wife, really.
Yes, she wouldn't want me to go into detail.
I was thinking the girl that you were going to, was she, there was a different girl you were going to.
Not at all. You know, I am my life partner, and who I'm illegally married to as well and living with since 9 is Patricia O'Brien.
Right. And the other girl's Judy or something, Jupiter Judy.
We've never, it was not our interest, it was friends.
Did she know that, like, was that part of, did she?
Did she know that I was a lesbian? Absolutely, yes.
Oh,
and
okay.
And so we went out for different reasons. No, so, but we went out to have fun. But she was, you know, she's.
So, like, if you met a couple of guys, that wouldn't be interesting to you? And,
you know, it's almost like when you go out now, because you happen to be in a relationship and you're married now, but think of it before you were with Phil.
Mm-hmm.
When you went out to...
Yeah, I dated. I went out a lot.
Besides going out, but when you were going to have something you do socially, let's call it an art opening, where you go in there to find someone to go home with? No, not specifically.
Well, I was always hopeful.
Oh, okay.
I was always hopeful. I used to bathe a lot more in those days. Yeah. I'll tell you that much. But, yeah, I know what you mean. I know what you mean. So I'm guessing, I'm going to say, I'll bet there's some connection between the situation you were in, which was highly social, you being a lesbian and taking photographs. I'm going to take a guess that there's a connection there. Is there?
Like
maybe having a camera with you or having another – like you were bringing a camera with you to these parties.
Yes, I was bringing a camera. I think every part of who you are and every experience, or for me, I bring with me. And so my back, just like my book right now in the show at Stephen Kashif Gallery is not just a nightlife. Mm-hmm. It's also from where I come from in Long Island, suburbia.
Right.
I've never felt like I'm just one thing. I'm Meryl. Meryl is someone who's born in the Bronx, who's...
Are you resisting having me put you in a box, Meryl?
I am. I am a woman. First of all, I'm Meryl Meisler. I'm Meryl. And I'm very proud. And part of my prism of who I am and how I see the world is the shoulders on whom I stand, my family, my mentors, mm-hmm. my DNA,
mm-hmm.
the people who've influenced my friends, my identity that I identify as,
mm-hmm.
say, feminist,
mm-hmm.
proud of my Jewish heritage.
Mm-hmm. Are you religious?
I mean,
do you go to synagogue very often?
Okay,
holidays?
How about this? I belong to two synagogues, but I'm not. I belong to the Woodstock Jewish congregation, also congregation. Congregation based in Kabbalah Torah, the largest LGBT synagogue in the city.
That's
but
cool.
I don't go often, but it's mm-hmm. meaningful
it's
to me.
It's part of who you
it's
are.
It's part of
yeah.
who I am.
And part of, and you sound also very connected to your family.
Very close to my family.
See, that's interesting too.
I like them. And being an artist and being, I mean, it's all part of my personality and persona.
Right.
And I'm proud of all of it. And so carrying a camera and using it was such a part of.
So it's just like, it's like, okay, I'm going to bring my lipstick, my keys, and my camera. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Yes. Still, you know what? I came here now and uh-huh. I said, oh, no, I'm going to be in the neighborhood where I want to be. And I was also with a former student who I didn't even know. And it's like, I'll bring my camera. And I took my keys and my lipstick and my wallet and Metro card.
And your camera.
Yes.
It's great.
So
we only, can you believe how fast this went? We'll have to have you back soon because we got cut short in the beginning.
Thank you.
But I just want to make sure, there was one more question that I wanted to ask you. And then I also want to – so we've got 5 minutes. We now have 4 minutes. I want to get in where your show is now, when it's up till. And then I also want to hear how you started taking pictures. Do you think you can go through those two things really fast?
Oh, sure. My show, which I'm extremely proud of.
As well you should be. I was at the opening. It was fantastic.
Thank you, Lisa. It's called Meryl Meisler. And it's at the Stephen Kashif Gallery, which is at 26th Street and 11th Avenue.
I'll post it all on my Facebook page.
And it's up through April 9th.
Okay, cool. There's some time left to see it. Go this weekend.
It's
a great show, and it's really heartfelt, and it'll like make you feel something and make you think something.
I am tickled pink.
Okay. So how did you start taking photographs? 3 minutes.
Okay. My grandfather always photographing as well. I got an Adventure 620 camera when I was 7 years old.
Oh my God.
So I photographed and an Instamatic. But then in 1972, I went to the Diane Arbus show at the Museum of Modern Art.
Wow.
And I was struck.
Wow.
Going to graduate school, I was not sure if I really wanted to go to graduate school, but you know, I had this, I need to get my master's to make my art ed degree permanent. I thought I might as well learn how to use a real camera. So that's how I started photographing, seriously.
Oh, wow. That's so interesting.
And I saw the work of Jacques-Henri Lartigue, who photographed his childhood friends and family in Paris. And I immediately knew I wanted to do self-portraits and photograph my family and friends and neighbors.
Wow.
And
So when you were 7, did you start dragging your camera everywhere at that point?
I took it for special occasions. I did many of the same things I still did. Mm-hmm. What were my themes? I photographed my friends on the block. Mm-hmm. I photographed my baby brother. I photographed school trips. Come on.
Did your parents think look at Meryl. She really took to that camera. She's always bugging us. Because getting the film developed and all that, that was expensive. Were you always involved with all that stuff?
I took pictures. I don't have that many because yes, it was a cost. But it was, I actually, you know, this is a Vivian Meyer story about the nanny.
Yeah, I saw that movie. That's amazing, right?
My grandfather was somebody who always had a serious camera on him. Nobody knows where his pictures are. It's almost, I understand that story very well. In fact, in some way, that's me. But I'm not waiting till my afterlife. I'm discovering Meryl now and letting
her
work out.
That's beautiful. Have you always, have you kept them organized over the years?
I actually do.
Good for you.
And I have to look through it, but I actually do have them organized so that I was able to, when Bazaar Publishing, God bless Bazaar Publishing, Bazaar, thank you, John Stefan.
Oh, those are great people. It's a great place.
Said, you know, do you want to publish my work? And I said, I want to show not just Bushwick, I want to show this disco work. He said, yeah, I see it. I said, well, I have to find it. I have to scan it. I've never shown it to anyone.
Anyway, you know, so I'm going to put this on my Facebook page.